ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
People in general all engage in foolish acts, not in the really beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their guidance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. I therefore offer my obeisances unto him who acts as eternal time. Purport. People in general are all engaged in senseless work. That's right. They are systematically unmindful of the real beneficial work, which is the devotional service of the Lord, technically called the Archana regulations. The Archana regulations are directly instructed by the Lord in the Narada Pancharatra, and are strictly followed by the intelligent men who know well that the highest perfectional goal of life is to reach Lord Vishnu, who is the root of the tree called the cosmic manifestation. Also in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, such regulative activities are clearly mentioned. Foolish people do not know that their self-interest is in realization of Vishnu. The Bhagavatam states, Matiya na krishne paratah svato va mitho bipatyeta grihapratanam adanta gobhir vishatanta misrang punah punas charvita charvananam nati vidu swarta gating hi vishnum durashaya ye bahirartha maninaha andhaya tandhai rupaniya manaste pishatantram urudam ibadha Naisham atis tavadurukramam grims vishatyanartha padamoyadartha mahiyasam padarajo bhishekam niskinchananam nabrinita yavat.
Persons who are determined to totally rot in false material happiness cannot become Krishna-minded, either by instructions from teachers, by self-realization, or by parliamentary discussions. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. Because of their foolish activities, they are unaware that the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation, and so their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction of material civilization, which is under the external energy. They are led by similar foolish persons, just as one blind man is led by another blind man, and both fall in the ditch. Such foolish men cannot be attracted towards the activities of the Supreme Powerful, who is actually the neutralizing measure for their foolish activities, unless and until they have the good sense to be guided by the great souls who are completely freed from material attachment. End of translation of the three verses, and continuing with the rest of the purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asks everyone to give up all other occupational duties and absolutely engage in archana activities or in pleasing the Lord. But almost no one is attracted to such archana activity. Everyone is more or less attracted by activities which are conditions of rebellion against the Supreme Lord. The systems of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. There is no auspicious activity except archana of the Lord. Jnana and yoga are sometimes accepted within the purview of archana when the ultimate aim is Vishnu, and not otherwise. The conclusion is that only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings eligible for salvation. Others are vainly struggle for existence without actual benefit.
I'm addressing all the bona fide human beings here. Srila Prabhupada writes here that only the devotees of the Lord are bona fide human beings. So you can go and tell they have the, what is that, United Nations Charter of Human Rights. But first of all, you should be a human being. They're not a human being unless you are a devotee of the Lord. So, all your rights are nullified by disobedience. We all have the right to cooperate in forgetting Krishna. It's the sacred... Whoops, you're not allowed to use that word. Nothing sacred. But it's the infringible right of every human being to whatever they say. Believe what you like, do what you like, think what you like, say what you like. This is not human life. According to this statement that Srila Prabhupada has written here, this may sound like some fanaticism, but actually that is very analytically, reasonably, logically stated in Hitopadesh, as Srila Prabhupada would often quote, Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanam etat pashubhinaranam dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhinaranam. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending, the animals do, and the humans do. So what's the difference between a human and an animal? The human being has the prerogative to engage in dharma. So, animal plus dharma equals human being. A plus B equals C. So, C minus B equals A. It's simple arithmetic. That human being, without the endeavor to understand Krishna, is simply an animal. So, it's not just some fanaticism, but it's can be understood that what distinguishes the human being from the animals, it's not the United Nations Charter of Human Rights. It's not the ethics, humanly conceived of ethics, politeness, science, art, music, fashion, or any such things. But the endeavor to understand Krishna makes one actually a human being, because human life is the only life form in which it is possible to make such an endeavor. Otherwise, it's only eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So whether one does that is in the form of a camel. Many of you who are coming to India for the first time, you're probably seeing camels outside the zoo for the first time. They still have them in Vrindavan. Maybe it's becoming too modernized. So they still have camels. Maybe not in Vrindavan town. I don't know. They have them in the town. So camels, hogs. You don't usually see them except in the supermarket, cut up in meal size portions in the Western countries, but here we see plenty of hogs, dogs, camels and asses. But what's the difference? If we say to someone, you're a pig, or in India a bigger insult is to say you're the son of a pig, because it insults your parents. That's more of an insult. But what's the difference? The difference is that I eat today, and what I eat today, the pig eats tomorrow. That's the only. They have it pre-digested form, fresh. So, this may seem to be a very strong statement, but it's coming in parampara. It's actually Lord Brahma making these statements. He is the subsequent creator of the universe. And he uses these terms. Vikama nirataha. Persons who are engaged in activities which here Prabhupada describes, he translates vikarma as work without sense. Karma means work.
Karma specifically means work according to the Vedic directions. So vikarma means activities which are not prescribed in the Vedas. Now, here Srila Prabhupada also writes in the purports that the systems of jnana and yoga are also indirectly rebellious acts against the Lord. Kushale, they're not, these are not beneficial activities. Kushal means that which is auspicious, beneficial. But jnana and yoga are not beneficial. Now that may seem to be against what is stated in the Vedic literature, because in Vedic literature there is recommendation. Jnana is very good, yoga is very good. Punya karma, performing pious activities, these are very good. So they are very good compared to being a complete ahara nidra bhaya maitanam cha person. But considering the possibility of human life, to engage in the word used here, Prabhupada is repeating in the purport, archana, which generally means the regulated system of worship of the deity form of the Lord, but herein is used in a broader sense of worshipping the Lord. In any way, there are various ways. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Nine principal ways of worshipping the Lord. So jnana and yoga, if engaged in without Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada writes here, there is no auspicious activity except archana of the Lord. They're also not auspicious. So generally people consider as pious activities, just like this Kumbh Mela. So many people, millions of people go because they consider it's a pious activity. That just by a very simple thing, just by bathing at the confluence of Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati at a certain time, it's not a difficult thing to do, but you get such a big effect. You get liberation from material existence. So they think it's worth going. Let's go. So they have that much sense. But they don't have enough sense to think that you can just chant Hare Krishna with even less trouble than going to Kumbh Mela, and you'll get an even better result. So even from the pure devotional perspective, even bathing in the Triveni, which is the practically the topmost popular pious activity, bathing at the Triveni, at the Amrita Yoga, at the particular time when the stellar influence guarantees one liberation, even that is not considered, it's auspicious compared to normal life. Normal life means forgetting Krishna in all respects. Sinva, vikarma, what is generally called vikarma, means activities. Nunang pramata kurute vikarma. The same words are used by Rishabh in these two words. Vikarma, pramata. Sinful activities. Pramata, most insane, very much insane. Here Prabhupada translates pramata as negligent. Simply to neglect, even if we don't do anything very wrong, even if we're pious, good people, as people often think, well, the best religion is just to be good, be nice, smile, don't say anything nasty to anyone, do unto thy neighbor as thou would do unto thyself. But even this, if we neglect to worship the lotus feet of the Lord, then even if we do attain liberation, which is not easy to get unless you bathe in the Kumbh Mela at the Amrita Yoga, then it becomes easy to get. But the result of that is patanti adho anarita yushvadamraya. That even if you get liberation, either by
Krich,
by very difficult austerities. Normally liberation is attainable by very difficult austerities, but even without difficult austerities, if you go and take a 5-star hotel in Allahabad and watch the latest Hindi movies on your portable DVD player, and just at the right time come down for the Amrita Yoga bath, and then go back to your hotel and watch some more DVDs. Even if you do that, you get the easy duvi karma and still get liberation. But the result is, because of neglecting to worship the lotus feet of Krishna, as Lord Brahma states, the demigods state, that those who neglect to worship Krishna, even if they attain apparent liberation, must fall down again from that position. So this is sounds very extreme, and in the modern age, extreme statements are not very popular. Everyone should just be nice to everyone, don't say anything extreme. But the fact is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Nate Vidu Swarta Gatinghi Vishnum Durasha Ye Bahiratamaninas. That people who do not recognize that the goal of life is Vishnu are simply hovering on the mental platform. Whether it's the mental platform of being a Hitler or the mental platform of being a Dalai Lama, it's all Maya, one way or the other. People say Hitler was very bad. He was very bad. But everyone who is not engaged in the service of Krishna is a killer of the soul. Everyone who is not engaged in the service of Krishna is in a sinful situation. So Hitler killed many bodies. But to kill the soul, to kill the opportunity for engaging the soul in his rightful activity of Krishna consciousness, is a worse violence. The worst violence is the worst violence is that which causes the most suffering and the most pain. So although killing in general is not good, killing the body is not good, that's never recommended in the Vedic literature. Well, it is sometimes, but generally not. That killing the body will result in some temporary pain, and of course that goes on and on, life after life, as long as we're not Krishna conscious. Therefore, to not utilize the opportunity for Krishna consciousness is the worst violence. This Srila Prabhupada writes, translating from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that the worst violence is not to engage in Krishna consciousness, to not take the opportunity. And we may think, well, how is that worse than Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, or whoever your favorite despot is? How is it worse? Because it's a worse kind of violence, because it causes suffering again and again and again. So these strong, sometimes foolish people, they interpret Shastra in various ways. Just like when they interpret, when Krishna says you should do bhakti to me, this is the ultimate, they say, well, that's just to engage people in that, just to help them. But actually there's something more beyond that. So they may say that, well, these severe statements, they're just to engage people, to put fear into people. But actually it's not true. But actually it is true that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're all His eternal servants, and failing to recognize that is the cause of all suffering. If you pick up a newspaper, newspaper means analysis of the most prominent suffering in the world, and
Nowadays it seems the newspapers are mostly sports. So that's also suffering, because people identify with some team, but most of the teams lose most of the time. Only one team is the winner, so to speak. And then when they, only one team wins the championship. And then the next time they lose it. So mostly everyone's lamented. And even if you take that as enjoyment, that my team won. But they're all, everyone's entangled in birth, death, old age and disease. So it's a chronicle of suffering. And they have their different commentaries. The president should do like this, and we have to have a policy to stop malaria, spend billions of dollars to stop malaria. So many programs, but the suffering goes on and on and on. There are so many great persons, Nobel Prize winner for peace. While they're offering the Peace Prize, so many people are getting blown up and bombed and tortured. Nobel Prize for medicine. In the meantime, so many people are dying for lack of medicine or for lack of treatment or for improper treatment. It goes on. And the foolish people think we shall make this adjustment, that adjustment, another adjustment. And if we suggest that the one cure for everything is simply to recognize that we're not supposed to be enjoying in this world our whole disease, the cause of all problems is our whole attitude to life, that we are trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. They may say, well, you're entitled to that opinion if you like. They give their blessings. As if you are entitled. I'm entitling you. I hereby entitle you with my United Nations Charter of Human Rights that you're allowed to have that opinion if you like. In this way, relativizing everything. But not serious to understand what are the real problems of life. Matiya na krishne paratasvato va mito vibhadyeta grihavratanam. Grihavratanam. Prabhupada translates this here as persons who are determined to totally rot. I am determined. I will rot in material existence. Don't try to tell me anything else. I am to totally rot in false material happiness. They cannot become Krishna-minded. Either by instructions from teachers, by self-realization, or by parliamentary discussions. World Parliament of Religions. International Peace Conference. International World Day of Prayer. Recently I was about 2 weeks ago, I was asked to speak on the occasion of the United Nations Day of Peace or something like that. So we'll have one day dedicated to peace. We'll all say Om and then hope for peace. Light candles is what they do. Release some doves. And in the meantime they're slaughtering so many animals and slaughtering their own souls by not being serious to understand what is the ultimate goal of life. They think that the ultimate goal of life is simply to enjoy. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha. Eat, sleep, drink, mate, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. So Brahma, who's creating this universe, he does so realizing that most of the people he's creating it for, they're not going to take advantage of the, what's the purpose of this universe? The purpose is to give the opportunity to persons who want to forget Krishna, to give them that opportunity, but at the same time to try to enlighten them to the real opportunity, which is to become Krishna conscious. But Brahma is realizing that not many people do. The Supreme Lord, out of his mercy,
gives the opportunity to those who are rebellious to him to come out of this situation. But most of them are not serious to do so. Brahma's task, it's a thankless task. He has to create a situation for people to forget Krishna. But at the same time, the material world is the sphere for the Lord's pastimes. So there is hope. From this verse, from these verses quoted, it seems it's a hopeless situation. People are determined not to become Krishna conscious. How are they going to become Krishna conscious? Well, how did we come to this? That's Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, Bhagyavanji, someone who's very fortunate, everyone in this material world is unfortunate. They're determined to be unfortunate. They think good luck is if I can win a lottery. It's good luck for me if I get voted to the Prime Minister's position. Good luck. Actually, it's very bad luck. Because then in the modern age, it's very bad because you have to take 1/6 of the reactions of all the people in the state. And they're promoting all sinful activities. Government means they're promoting slaughterhouses, pornography, gambling. In so many countries, the government raises money from gambling. And most countries, they raise money from intoxication. They don't want the people not to be intoxicated because they get a lot of tax money from it. They want you to be intoxicated with the things that they get taxes from. They don't want you to be intoxicated with cocaine or marijuana because that's not taxed. But it's alright to be intoxicated with alcohol because we get money from that. So a very hypocritical government. The one who can become fortunate by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, they can get the seed of bhakti planted in their heart. And even though the tendency of the conditioned souls is to run away from Krishna, so much so that when they see persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness, they often ask, why aren't you normal? They're not normal. But they presuming themselves, their standard of dressing, behaving, speaking, presuming this to be normal, they presume that devotees who act in the manner of bona fide human beings, they presume them to be abnormal. And sometimes mock or even become violent against or pass legislation against the endeavor to be Krishna conscious. So devotees, those who have come to Krishna consciousness, sometimes they find that social pressure, why aren't you normal? They find that an obstacle. Or they think that, well, it's too difficult to be a devotee. But just see, if we regularly study Bhagavatam, then our intelligence can remain clear that who are we? What are we doing? Why are we doing what we are doing? Why should we be fully surrendered to Krishna and not at all interested in material development? Why is that? It's very clear if we regularly study Shastra. Shastra, of course, the topmost descriptions are those of, in this upcoming month of Kartik, there'll be lots of hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Damodar Leela, how Mother Yashoda binds Krishna, how Radharani binds Krishna. That's also another meaning of the name Damodar. There have been many discussions of Krishna's wonderful pastimes. But we should also see in Bhagavatam, regularly throughout Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto also, there are so many descriptions like this in this verse today, which help us to keep our consciousness very clear, to differentiate between the disaster that is known as not being Krishna conscious and that which is actually kushal, as described in this verse, that which is auspicious, which is to engage in bhavad archana, the worship of you, Krishna. There is a difference. It's not all the same. It's not just an opinion or a path that we have chosen. You could have become a Rastafarian, or you could have become a yogi, or you could have become a hippie, or you could have become a successful businessman, or you... But no, we've come to this path. Why? First, we should see that what is the differentiation? Even this Lord Brahma is not speaking about people who go around with clubs and knives and kill people. He's not referring to them as being foolishly engaged in materialistic, sinful activities. Everyone who is not engaged in Krishna consciousness, even the so-called nice people, even the so-called good people, even the environmentalists, and the save the forest for our sense gratification, save the whale so that our future generations can take photos of them or something like that. We should save the earth. But anyway, they save the earth. The earth is doomed anyway. There's nothing you can do to you. We can't save the earth. In course of time, the earth will burn in the fire of destruction. Nothing you can do to save the earth. To save our souls, that is required to save from the burning fire of material life. Everything else is simply vikarma, sinful activity, pramata, negligence, work, vikarma, work without sense. It doesn't make any sense. People praise, very good, this person is doing very good, but without Krishna consciousness, it doesn't make any sense. Can anyone suggest any work without Krishna consciousness that is beneficial to human society or beneficial to anyone in any way? Any suggestions?
Living in Vrindavan as an animal?
Living in Vrindavan as an animal. Yes, but why is that of any benefit? Because of connection with Krishna. But we're interested to think if anyone can suggest of any activity which is not connected with Krishna, which is of any benefit, of any ultimate benefit to anyone in any way.
Food distribution.
Yes, it's very good. As I was saying, you fill your own belly today and produce breakfast for the pigs tomorrow. So it's beneficial. So how is that beneficial?
Some devotees might get some.
Yes, that is true. That is why in the Vedic literature pious activities are recommended. They are of no use whatsoever. You go to the heavenly planets, you come down again. But if you... Actually, devotees only take Krishna prasadam. So... But for instance, if you plant a shade tree with the idea that someone will get shade and I will get punya, so I will go to the heavenly planets. That's true. What's the use of going to the heavenly planets? But if a devotee comes past chanting the holy names underneath the shade tree that you planted, then you get spiritual benefit. It's called Agyata Sukriti. But it still didn't answer the question, because the benefit comes when there's connection with Krishna. Otherwise, it's of no ultimate benefit to anyone. It's like, you know, you're being tortured, beaten with whips, and someone's fanning you. So that's a benefit. It's a very hot day, so nice and cool. Whack, whack. So you can't avoid the suffering. Yes. How about stopping the slaughter of cows? It is beneficial in as much as the slaughter of cows, it creates a highly sinful activity in which people cannot become Krishna conscious. So benefit or non-benefit can actually only be gauged in terms of relationship to Krishna. That's the point. Stopping polluting the earth and killing the animals. Yeah, you can try if you like. Animal liberation. Really? You want the tigers liberated? Let them out of the zoo? Well, we'll give you a pet cobra if you like. Pet alligator. Some people have pet alligators. Yeah, these are sinful activities, no doubt. And we're against sinful activities. But at the same time, the endeavor to stop sinful activities or the endeavor to make the earth a better place without relationship to Krishna, first of all, it won't happen because people have the exploitive tendency. And the most intelligent exploiters, they always get in power. So it's just like there are all these demonstrations against globalization, and it goes on and it's going to go on, even though most of the people may be against it. But a few people have the power, and you can say, well, it's a conspiracy, let's find them out and kick them out. But there have always been conspiracies, and there always will be. And if you kick out one bunch, you get another bunch. You kick out Marie Antoinette, then you get Napoleon, who made a worse disaster for France. Then, well, he's praised by the French, but actually he marched them all to war and got so many of them killed. So it's either, you can't avoid it. Suffering cannot be stopped, or bad consciousness or sinful activities cannot be stopped unless we come to the proper understanding of sambandha jnana, of who we are and what we're doing in this world, what this world is for. And even if you were to make the world a better, greener, less polluted place, what would be the use of living here and breathing less pollution on our way to hell? It's the same thing, that being fanned while you're being beaten. So there's no benefit in these activities without Krishna conscious. And if one is Krishna conscious, then automatically these things will follow, or should be. Sometimes devotees have misunderstandings also, and saying that, well, because we're Krishna conscious, we can just do whatever we like. That Krishna consciousness is an excuse to act in a most vulgar and inconsiderate manner, but actually it's the opposite. So the only solution to the world's problems is Krishna consciousness. That's right. Prabhupada was priming one of his disciples. He was telling Bhagavan, you have to write a book on how to solve all the problems, how Krishna consciousness solves all the problems of the world. So Bhagavan was giving all the different problems, and Prabhupada was giving the answers. What about the petrol problem? There's a shortage of petrol. Prabhupada said, you live locally, produce your own food, and you don't need to go anywhere, so you don't need any petrol. That's the solution to the petrol problem. Live simply. Unfortunately, we haven't been very enthusiastic to implement. Srila Prabhupada's actually very revolutionary ideas. I mean, so many things Prabhupada says, I quite different to that which is accepted as normal, proper, axiomatically correct. Just like in the modern age, it's accepted that, well, women's liberation, women should be free to do the same thing as men. But Prabhupada pointed out, a 16-year-old boy can go all over the world, a 16-year-old girl can't. She can if she likes, but she'll be used by men. So, or they say that in India now it's a law, you're not allowed to get married till you're 18. Prabhupada is saying they should be married before puberty. And they protest that, girls, they're married at the age of 12 and they have children at the age of 14, it's very bad. Whereas in the Western country, they're having children at the age of 14 also, but they're not married, that's all. So what's better, to be married religiously and have children? Well, you can kill the babies also, but that's sinful. So many of the prescriptions Prabhupada suggested, which are all according to Shastra, are nowadays, or in modern society, considered something very wrong. Very bad. They've got everything upside down. They've got all the wrong ideas. Yeah, you want to make a comment? Yeah, okay, question. Give the mic. Otherwise, if there's no mic, come speak loudly and I'll repeat it. Yeah. The mic has come. Hare Krishna.
I was just wondering throughout your presentation, if it's really necessary to raise that question, is there any activity that's not Krishna consciousness, any beneficial to you in society? We were hearing a few days ago the verse comparing the modes to different stages of wood, smoke, and fire. Sattva guna is valuable compared to fire. It does actually make people say relatively happy in the world, but the more important thing is that, though it may not be directly Krishna conscious, but it is the springboard where Krishna conscious, Prabhupada says many times in his books that without developing sattva guna, one cannot come to Krishna consciousness. Without compromising the independence of bhakti, that's still there. You just mentioned at the end of your presentation that they're not following Shastra. They're not marrying, they don't believe they should marry early. But according to a lot of what I've been hearing, what difference does it make? This is as good as a mile. If they marry at 60, or they marry at 15, or they marry at 30, if it's not Krishna conscious, what's the use? The fact is, it seems that there is some use to sattva guna and following Shastra. If one cannot follow, we always talk about the yoga ladder. If we can't become devotees, then at least get on some rung of the yoga ladder, and then there's some possibility.
Yeah, that came out.
It seems like a contradiction,
yeah. Well, that came out, I hope. Well, maybe it didn't come out strongly or clearly enough. That attempts to improve human society without Krishna consciousness are useless. Unless there's the opportunity to come to Krishna consciousness, then one can be very good, apparently very good, but it won't actually help one. So sattva guna is valuable in as much as it gives rise to the opportunity to become Krishna. In other words, devotees of the Lord who give that opportunity to become Krishna conscious, they give meaning to the creation. Otherwise, sattva guna, in and of itself, unless one does come up, then he'll simply go down again. Who's in sattva guna today? If they don't develop, if you don't come up to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then due to the nature of the material modes of nature, you'll just go down again. So even we may say that just like this, you know, save the whale, make the earth green. That, we may say, is there's some admixture of sattva-guna. It's not a purely sattvic activity. It's based on the misconception that this earth is meant for us to enjoy. But it's better than promoting slaughterhouses, that's for sure. But from the ultimate state, that I was also saying, like Gyan and Yoga, even that, in the purport, Prabhupada has rejected them as being useless. Although in some parts of Shastra, it recommends them. And why is that? That from the point of view of the yoga ladder, they are considered useful. But if you don't, if after going to, or coming to a higher level, a level that's higher than gross sense gratification, one doesn't come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then it all becomes ultimately useless. So that's the urgency, the necessity of Krishna consciousness being stressed here. Certainly it's better for human society that there are not slaughterhouses, that there are not ugra karmic industries. But even that, even if one lives in a society that is very peaceful, actually that's not very possible without Krishna consciousness, or that's vegetarian, it doesn't actually help one. And it will degrade, just like we see, for instance, Buddhism was started on the basis of ethics, vegetarianism, ahimsa paramo dharma, Buddha's teaching. Ahimsa, non-violence, is the topmost religion. But we'll find in the Buddhist countries that most of the people are committed meat eaters. And recently in Thailand, which is a Buddhist country, there was like a born-again Buddhist movement. Because the regular Buddhists, including the monks, are all meat-eaters. So there was an organization which said, we want to be real Buddhists and we're vegetarians. And the status quo, that means the government-supported monks, they responded against this, and they said that the proof that this organization are not real Buddhists is that they're vegetarians. So I'm just giving that as an example. Yeah, strange, isn't it? Because the Buddhist that they presume a Buddhist is a non-vegetarian, because that's the kind of Buddhist they know. So the tendency is there. The mode of goodness in and of itself is not conducive to the ultimate welfare of the soul, and particularly in Kali Yuga, without the actual principle of the Jaiva Dharma, the necessity of the soul, without that, then the tendency is for everything to degrade very quickly. And even, what to speak of the mode of goodness, even the pure Krishna consciousness movement, without the clear delineation of what is Krishna consciousness, then very quickly so many strange ideas enter.
More to say, but I don't want to take up time in class. I'm hoping I've got the opportunity to talk to you personally.
I was told by Janardhan Prabhu that despite this thing here telling me I have to finish at 9 a.m., I could go on a little longer.
I'll just say it in a nutshell. My position is sattva guna is actually very beneficial to human society.
Yeah.
As devotees, we're very pleased to see even the temporary suffering alleviated. We'd rather see people not in hell. We'd rather see people
I agree. But that doesn't. That is correct. It also doesn't nullify what I said. Both things are correct. I spoke according to the verse and purport. There's another way of looking at it also, which is not incorrect. The mic is with Shuddhi Prabhu.
Yes.
Shuddhi actually means someone who's hungry, isn't it?
Yes. Son of Krishna means
Yeah.
Along that line, reading
Please speak into the mic.
Killing the cows instantly, there's like the same 20 pounds of grain they make a pound of beef. And by doing these things, we can stop, which also this fuel is non-polluting for the cows.
Yeah.
And even though it isn't directly in relationship to Krishna consciousness, does it not help to show the people that part of our policies?
Yeah, Prabhupada wanted very much that devotees live simply and show a better way of life. Again, without Krishna consciousness, what happens is that the tendency, in, because we don't have a clear understanding of what is needed for society, we change society to something better. But then we all have different speculations over what's better. And we create more problems in another way. And it goes on and on and on like this. And
people are not purified.
Yeah.
Even though you tell them that, they say, oh, I'm not prepared to accept that because they're not purified. Even though the fact that they're rather meat and cause damage to the animal, to the environment.
Yeah,
and they don't care.
Another thing is, as long as our tendency for sense gratification is the central focus of our life, then our philosophy will be adjusted according to that. Recently, I was getting on a plane, one of those oil guzzling machines, and it was in Europe, and there was a businessman from India there. So he was speaking to me and said, oh, are you vegetarian? I said, yeah, kind of. Our motto is not vegetarianism. I said, well, I'm a Jain. We're better vegetarians than you because we don't eat anything from under the ground. So, but dear sir, this airplane is powered by oil. Where do you think that came from? And he said, well, you have to be practical also. So, his idea, vegetarianism, this is very good, we're not causing any harm to any living being. The ideal sounds good, but we can't practically practice it. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the only ultimately beneficial activity to human society. Certainly it's better not to have slaughterhouses. But even then, the tendency for exploitation is there. We'll be exploiting in one way or the other. And without Krishna consciousness, then the tendency to, especially in Kali Yuga, that will degrade very quickly also. So it's a very high ideal, no doubt. It means changing the consciousness completely. Even in Sattva Gun, the consciousness that we are here, we are to enjoy separately from Krishna, that's not been changed.
Beneficial
to show people obvious karmic connection
because cows are violence. Yeah, it should be stated. Stated, they don't
listen. Yeah, it's difficult work. Preaching is difficult work, no doubt. Okay, one more question now.
Please. In regard to protecting the earth.
Yeah. Say it again in the mic because people
miss it. In regard to protecting the earth. Like alluded many times that we perhaps wouldn't be such good devotees, but our children's children gradually become purer and purer devotees. And they're just in the purple of Prabhupada's class the other day, saying they may be flying in the sky and in the circle. And we also know that demigods, they want to take birth on the earth for the next 10,000 years.
In devotees' families, and some of them are doing that, it seems. Some of the children of devotees are very special souls.
So in that sense, I think we have to regard these people as all doing some kind of devotional service when they're trying to protect the earth. We should be expert enough.
Well, if it's not, if they don't clearly recognize Krishna, it can't be considered bhakti. It can be considered dharma, but not directly bhakti. And unless they accept the sense of subordination to Krishna, then according to the definitions given by Shastra and Acharyas, it's not in and of itself bhakti.
But isn't that why you need Krishna conscious leaders? So that all, because you're never going to get everyone become devotee. Mm. You're always going to have a few people who are devoted. So that's why you need devoted leaders, and these people should be encouraged in the lines in which they naturally want to work, but led by devotees. So that
can often we find that the green people or eco people, they like prasadam and they like devotees. Often we find that. That's true, yeah. But the point is, again, here, the philosophical point is that without actually taking to Krishna consciousness, which begins with appreciation of devotees or appreciation of prasadam, then it's all ultimately of no real benefit to the soul.
You have to trick them into it.
Well, yeah, that's the point. But at the same time, we should understand that in and of itself, unless we endeavor to give Krishna consciousness to them, that in and of itself, they're not really helping themselves or anyone else. And that's the point. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Rama Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Announcement for anyone who's interested. On Prabhupada's order, I've written some books, and some of them are available here. If anyone would like to see, please come and take them. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I've got some Mahaprasad. Mahaprasad cookies. Hare Krishna.
Is it not said that paramo dharma and upadharma?
Ah, something. Whether